Joining us on the line now is Mark Mason. He's an author and trivia buff. We chatted to him a few years ago about his book, Question Time, A Journey Around Britain's Quizzes. He wrote a piece last week in the Daily Mail talking about an upcoming quiz show hosted by Jeremy Vine called Quizmaster, with the brainiest contestants from The Chase, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, Mastermind, University Challenge and 15 to 1 all pipped up against each other. It sounds like a great show. I can't wait. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Morning, Hannah.
Hi, thanks very much for joining us. So when does this show start?
It's in the next few weeks, I think. From what I hear, they've already started production on it. But yeah, you're right, it does sound pretty fearsome, because anyone, for instance, who's seen The Chase will know that The Chase has got some serious quizzes on it. I met a few of them when I did the book that you mentioned again then, going around the country, going to different quizzes. And, of course, they go along to the serious, what I would call the more nerdy quizzes, where you're expected to know every capital city in the world and every chemical element and every 1953 Swedish film with subtitles and all that sort of stuff. And they really do know it. They're pretty scary people.
That's amazing. So you mean the chasers themselves?
Yeah, there are about five of them, I think, aren't there? I've got to know over the last couple of years a guy called Sean Wallace, who's one of the chasers on there. He's a barrister, and he's such a lovely guy. And it's quite scary just chatting to him in normal conversation, that you think anything that crops up in this conversation, you're probably going to know the answer to. It's fairly intimidating,
Yeah, I can imagine. It's interesting looking at your article and trying to work out the hardest quizzes. I think most people would agree that University Challenge does seem to be on a different level to all of the others.
I think so. In terms of each specific piece of information, there you will be expected to know the chemical symbols and chemical reactions and equations and all that sort of stuff. You're expected to actually know what you're talking about rather than just know lists of information. Although I have to say, researching the piece, one of my favourite silly questions, if you like, was in the University Challenge bit, and it's, which word in this question contains the same number of letters as its immediate predecessor? Now, that's for the listeners to be working on. I'll say it again just in case they want clarification. Which word in this question contains the same number of letters as its immediate predecessor? Should we let them carry on working on that?
Absolutely. Let's. Not me. It's difficult, isn't it? I mean, it helps to be able to write these things down sometimes.
Yeah, that's...
If you can scribble it down.
Of course, by definition, with a TV quiz show, it's written down for you. It's at the bottom of the screen normally. But it depends on format. Well, the thing I found writing my book was that the best quizzes are the ones that are entertaining. Most people are there for a quiz. Normally it's to raise money for the school parent association or whatever it is, and everyone's there to have fun. It's not meant to be a test of your knowledge. It's meant to be fun. And so I've started writing quizzes myself over the years and thinking about it in those terms. The really good questions are the ones that people think are really hard, but then they realize that, and again, this is the example I'm going to give you is where writing it down helps. They realize that they've worked it out and they feel really good with themselves and they feel as though they've achieved something. So to give you the example, Ingvar Kamprad from the village of Elmtorid near Agunnaryd in Sweden invented something in 1948. What was it? Well, let's say he founded rather than invented. He's called Ingvar Kamprad, and he was actually, his farm was called Elmtorid, and it was near the village of Agunnaryd. And so then if people are sounding a bit... you can tell people are looking, wow, how am I expected to know that? So I'll give them the spellings and I'll say, right, his name is Ingvar, I-N-G-V-A-R, Kamprad, K-A-M-P-R-A-D, and the village, the farm was called Elmtorid, E-L-M-T-A-R-Y-D, and it was near the village of Agunnaryd, A-G-U-N-N-A-R-Y-D. And so once they've written it down, they realise, have you got it yet, Hannah?
No, I'm desperately trying. I feel like I'm close, but no, I don't think so.
Well, all right, let me give you those spellings again. The name began I, K, and the farm began E, and the village began A.
IKEA!
There you go, you see. And even if they're just writing it up, if they write those names down underneath each other, Yeah. They'll notice that at the beginning of each line. And even if they write them out in a single line, you'll probably notice it. Yeah. And of course, Sweden's in the question as well. So, you know, that's your extra confirmation. So what initially sounds like quite a difficult question can actually be very easy to work out, and you feel really clever for doing it.
Yeah, definitely. It's funny, people say to me all the time, because I do host a weekly quiz, as you know, and uh-huh. people say to me all the time, oh, I've got a great quiz question for you. And I say, okay. And then they ask me a ridiculously complicated question, and I say, I've got absolutely no idea. And then they give me the answer, and you go, okay. And you just know that that's not a great quiz question. If
even once they've given you the answer, you still don't care.
No.
But I always give the classic example of a dull quiz question is, what's the capital of Albania? Because either you know it or you don't.
Yes.
And in neither case is there any sense of achievement.
No.
Whereas something like, you know, something that's got a bit of weight to it, if you know what I mean, because it involves Greek mythology, is which UK high street retailer has the same name as Odysseus's dog in Greek mythology. Which gives rise to any number of... My favourite wrong answer to that ever was Fat Face. Which, because there you've got two possible routes in. You might have someone on your team who loves their Greek mythology and just knows the answer. But most people can mentally walk down their local high street in their mind.
Yeah.
Come up with it. Again, I'm going to put you on the spot now, Hannah. Any idea?
Oh, gosh. No, I'm thinking of loads of different shops and thinking, well, none of them sound like they'd be part of Greek mythology. So
Marks and Spencer, no. Another definition of a good question is when you get given the answer, you'll go, oh, of course I should have got that.
Yeah, exactly.
The answer to this one is that Odysseus's dog was called Argos.
Oh, that was my first thought. How annoying.
Well, why didn't you say it then?
I don't know. As soon as you said it straight away, I thought Argos, and then I thought, no, that's probably a silly
answer. You know the golden rule of quizzing, Hannah, is that it's always the first answer you think of, apart from the times it isn't.
Exactly. Always stick with your first answer. We had that on Thursday, lots of people changing their answers, and then the first answer that they had was always right.
That's where the 50-50 comes in, and that's where I think that's a really good point on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, was when they used their 50-50 and there were two answers left. If it doesn't matter how certain you are of one of them, there is something about the human mind, especially when they've got £1 million at stake, but even just for a couple of points in a pub quiz, when just doubt starts to kick in and you start to doubt yourself and think, hang on, am I absolutely sure of that? One of my favourites, I use this quite a lot, is on a UK stamp, does the Queen's head face to the left or to the right?
The left, I would say.
Absolutely right.
Oh, good.
And another good thing about a good quiz is that you always walk away from it having learned something. And especially, I like to do questions where there's a little bit of, if you've got time in the evening, there's a bit of, a moment or two to give some supplementary info when you're reading out the answer. So with the stamp one, monarchs have always faced to the left. Ever since Queen Victoria was on the first stamp,
okay,
they've always looked out to the left. On coins, do you know about this?
How no. Coins? What coins is the other way?
No, they alternate. They have alternated all the way back to Charles II. On our current coins with the Queen, she's facing to the right. Her father, George VI, faced to the left. And so on all the way back, Charles, assuming that it's Charles, or whoever's the next monarch, will face to the left. And he goes all the way back to Charles II, and the only monarch who threatened to disrupt that was the famously vain Edward VIII, who said that, no, his better side was facing the... You know, he was going to break the pattern, whichever way round it was. They said, you've got to face this way, sir. It's it's your turn to turn around and face that. He said, no, I'm going to... And I think they did mint some coins, some sort of prototypes, with him facing the wrong way. But because he was only king for 10 months, they never got put into circulation.
Yeah.
And when his brother, George VI, took over, his brother said, well, I'll carry the pattern on as it should have been.
Right.
So, i.e. facing the same way as George V. So then Edward VIII would have faced the other way if he'd played ball.
Mm.
And then George VI was back to facing left. And that's why his daughter faces right.
Fascinating.
You know, a quiz, even if you walk away having won nothing all night in the quiz, and everyone else has walked off with a box of dairy milk and the vouchers for the local beauty parlour or whatever it is that's the prize in the quiz, at least you've learned something.
Yeah. One of the things that came up a few weeks ago was one of my questions was, how many stars are there on the European flag or the EU flag, and lots of people were, you know, really discussing it, and oh, I don't know, and you know, something that's so familiar that you've seen so many times.
Oh, that's it, yeah. And familiarity, people... it's incredible what you cannot know. It's 12, isn't it, I think?
Yeah, it is 12, and it's the hands of a clock. That's the positioning of all of them.
I had to look into this for something I was writing a couple of years ago, and the truth is nobody knows. And the more you write, my books, for better or worse, are full of this sort of trivia. And so I spend my life looking this sort of stuff up. And very often you'll find that nobody knows. And you know, there might be somebody who surmised that it might be hands of a clock.
No, but, I don't, you know, I don't mean that that's what they stand for. I just mean that's the way to remember it.
Oh, I see. Sorry. Oh, well, yeah, that's a very good way of remembering it.
Yeah.
And there have always been 12. Back when there were the original six members, they had 12. Now that there are more than six members, they had 12. I thought you were going to say how many stars are there on the US flag and why.
No, well, isn't that the amount of states? Isn't it 50?
There are 50 stripes.
Oh, 50 stripes that represent
when,
the states.
As and when they add another state, they will add a 51st stripe, yeah.
Okay.
But, no, sorry, you're absolutely right. Yes, you are right with the stars. I meant to say with the stripes. You're absolutely right. There are 50 stars.
50 stars.
And when there's a 51st one, they'll add another one.
Okay.
But how many stripes are there?
Oh, that I'm not sure of. Is there like 16 or something?
Not a bad guess. There are 13.
Okay.
And do you know why there are 13?
13. No.
They were the original 13 states.
Ah, okay. So there was 13 for quite a while before the others were added.
Yeah. And well, there's various different points of how you define when the US started. But yeah, they decreed that at the beginning there were 13 stripes of the 13 states. And ever since then, when they've added another state, most recently in 1949... with Hawaii and Alaska. Well, so I think were they both in 49? I think Alaska was the most recent in 49. And I think Hawaii was not long before that. So yeah,
I thought Hawaii was the final one. Alaska came after Hawaii, didn't it?
Oh, if we want a quiz team, this is where we'd be talking ourselves into.
Yeah, exactly.
Know that Hawaii is the only US state that's got no straight lines in its borders.
That's got no straight lines in its borders. Oh, that's interesting.
Because it's an island.
There's no borders, yeah.
But even Alaska, although all those wiggly bits, there are some straight lines in Alaska's border where it comes up against Canada.
I've just had a message from a listener who says, my favourite question was, which foot did Neil Armstrong step on the moon first? Do you know that one?
I'm fairly sure that it was his... Have they given you the answer?
They have, yeah.
I'm fairly sure it's left.
Yeah, he said left. Yeah. Well done.
And I think my way of remembering that is that he differs with Cristiano Ronaldo, because Ronaldo always puts his right foot onto the pitch first.
Oh.
When he's walking onto the pitch for the start of the game or running on, he makes sure that his right foot crosses the white line before his left.
Oh, how funny. How funny.
That's the great thing about this sort of trivia and so-called unimportant information. A, it just makes you laugh, and it's a curious little thing that, you know, this fantastically talented international sportsman still has these little quirks.
Yeah.
But also it just links together two completely different people, Neil Armstrong and Cristiano Ronaldo. Mm.
That's a great one. When you mentioned the 50-50 thing earlier, I always remember when watching Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, so often when the 50-50 is used, the two that the contestant is left with are the two that they couldn't decide between.
Yeah.
So it actually doesn't help them at all.
Yeah.
And
you do have to believe, and of course you would believe Celador. That's the beauty of, they came up with such a brilliant concept that the Celador are absolutely telling the truth when the computer does take away, it leaves the right answer and one random remaining right answer. Mm. It's not the producers messing with them.
Right.
It's just, you know, it's quite statistically likely that there's a fair chance that the two that remain will be the ones that they were stuck between. Yeah.
Yeah. Mastermind, I think the Mastermind general knowledge questions are quite good. They're a good mix, I think.
They're getting easier, Mastermind.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was a kid, Mastermind was like the equivalent of University Challenge.
Yeah, I agree,
Complex chemical reactions and mathematical formulas and all that sort of stuff. Now there are some ridiculous... In fact, going through the book, I got, for the piece, I got some of the Mastermind questions from one of their books. Some of them are, you know, they might as well start off with what's two and two, because to give the contestant to settle them down a bit. But there were some fun ones in there. I'm just looking at the mastermind questions now. Again, this is quite easy, but again, a good thing that a question can do is just make you have a fond memory, especially in a pub. You know, you're there to have fun. In which hit song for the Kinks does Terry meet Julie every Friday night? So, of course, you know what the answer is.
Do I?
Hannah.
Is it Lola? No, it's not Lola.
No. Oh. Terry meets Julie every Friday. Where does he meet her? Terry meets Julie.
Oh, yes, at Waterloo Sunset.
Waterloo Sunset.
Yeah.
Lola, the brilliant story about that is that the original lyrics were Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
And you know about Ray Davies had to fly back from America to re-record it.
Oh, really?
The BBC wouldn't play Lola because of advertising rules. It mentioned Coca-Cola. So the Kinks were on tour in the States, and Ray Davies had to fly back. I mean, these days he'd do it on his iPhone and text it to his manager and they'd put it into the
yes.
song. But a text, that's made me feel really old-fashioned, doesn't it? I should have said WhatsApp or something. But yeah, he had to fly back just to re-record that one line, to say Cherry Cola instead of Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
And then fly back and join the band on tour.
Unbelievable. There's different versions, isn't there, out there, I believe?
Very often they'll, all the modern rap stuff, when you hear it on the radio, every other word is just faded out, and you've got the music put on top of it. There's a rather choice language in there.
Well, I could chat to you for ages. I've just noticed the time, and unfortunately we're going to have to leave it there.
But the sign of a good quiz is it takes up the whole evening.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, if people want to get a copy of your book, it's a fabulous book. It's called Question Time, A Journey Around Britain's Quizzes, and it's available to buy on our website in the TRE bookshop section. Mark Mason, thank you so much for joining us. Always great to chat.
Cheers, Anna. All the best.
Thank you. Bye-bye.